Welcome, good people. John M. Schrader here. Podcast 5, and ironically, this is my fifth day of what I call semi-retirement. Wow, what a week. The good news is, it was about the way I thought it would be. The bad news is, I think I worked harder this week than I've worked in a long, long time. But for me, that is exactly what I was hoping for. I've heard it said by some people that they go back to work so they aren't working so hard. Others say that if you're doing what you love, you never work a day in your life. Still others say to me, John, we've heard enough. Can you just go somewhere and leave us alone? Yeah, this is why it's important to have at least 5 groups of friends so that each week you can just bug one group of friends at a time, and then the next week they're ready to listen to you again. Today's topics. Why was landscaping my cup of tea? Number 2, when did I realize that there seems to be a problem with perfection? How long does it take for you to realize your passion? And then how will that passion shape your future? We're going to talk about the great debate. I'm sure you've all heard that there's supposed to be some debate next Thursday. And shoot, let's just talk about debate a little bit later on. Had an incredibly wonderful grade school 50th reunion this last week. Touch base on that a little bit. Some people have said they've never heard of a 50th reunion for grade school, but we as a group of class members decided let's do it, and turned out to be an amazing day. So that and a few other things we'll talk about, and hopefully I can keep you entertained. So why was landscaping my cup of tea? There were a whole lot of reasons that landscaping worked for me. Because of my background, because of my love of the outdoors, I grew up with very little money. Once I decided I wanted to do my own business, there weren't a lot of businesses that I financially could have gone into. Landscaping was one of those amazing businesses that you can start out as small as you want to. Coming out of college, as I've mentioned before, I had a few thousand dollars saved, which that doesn't happen much anymore these days, but I was able to start a very small mowing business that I was able to build on gradually. And when I finally was able to get into the landscaping field, it really allowed me to energize myself, but it also gave me a whole lot of unique opportunities to build what I'm excited about building today. Landscaping was certainly my cup of tea. Landscaping was an opportunity for me to be outside 90% of my day. When my company was small, I was the individual that from the time I walked out my door in the morning to the time I came in at night, I was able to be outside doing what I loved to do. As the business grew, I did have to spend more time in sales, more time in the office. I remember people thinking, gosh, John, now that you're in your office and you can just kind of relax, you're probably having more fun. No, wasn't the case. I really wanted to be out there every day. I wanted to be physically working hard. I wanted to be with the crew. I wanted to be around the customers. But as your business grows sometimes, your job description changes. One of the things that I wrote about years ago was a day that I'll never forget, and it has to do with the understanding and the definition of perfection. One of my two passions in landscaping, my first was aquatics. Even though landscaping can take on a whole lot of different nuances, to some, landscaping is planting a lot of shrubs and trees, bushes, flowers, that type of thing. Others, landscaping is hardscapes. You're creating walls, you're building patios, you're using materials that you don't have to worry about them blooming or not. They're going to be around for a very, very long time. Landscaping is one of those areas that sometimes it's hard to tell people no. One of my problems was, John, we like the way you cut the grass. Will you guys do our landscaping? Yeah, okay. John, we like the way you do our landscaping. Will you do our irrigation? Sure, okay, yeah, we'll do that. John, we love the way you do your landscaping. Would you be willing to be our chemical company? Learning to say no was difficult because once I developed a relationship with a customer or a company, we wanted to do a little bit of everything. And in today's world, you see more and more companies are wanting a one-team operation. So saying no was difficult for me, but over time, I realized that there were some areas that we were not as good at as other areas. But one of my great passions, without question, was getting into aquatics. Back in the late 80s, early 90s, everyone started talking about water gardens. Everyone was looking at these beautiful fish called koi. Everyone was looking at the magazine and seeing that perfectly clear, beautiful water feature, and they had to have it. For a lot of women, quite honestly, the tranquility of the sound of water coming over rocks and being able to go out and listen to that in one's backyard was a great feeling for them. So, as I've mentioned in the past, aquatics for me was fantastic because it was kind of a reminder of the time my father and I spent many, many days on the river, by the lakes, by the streams, fishing. I had a customer one day that, after we had been in this business for probably close to a decade, she had called me out and she wanted to know if we could come out, improve, maintain, and work with her pond that she just was not happy with. I remember going out, and at this stage of the game, most of my days were spent with sales, working with customers. I would spend about a half an hour in the morning putting the crews together and sending them out. And then the rest of the day, working with my designers and salespeople, going out, meeting with customers, and so on and so forth, so that I was really in a different mode than I had been previous years. The lady had called me because by now, thankfully, we were known as one of the better aquatics company in town. Aquatics was something all the landscapers wanted to get into because it was the biggest, exciting new rush. However, like many things, if you don't do your research, if you really didn't get into aquatics and learn the 5 or 6 or 7 really important rules of building water gardens, chances are a couple years later, you were going to get a call because something wasn't quite right. I fell in love with it, took my company to different seminars throughout the country because I did want to be known as one of the best aquatic companies in the region. And I learned that other companies weren't necessarily doing the same thing I was because we were getting calls later on from people that their water gardens that we had not installed were having problems, they were leaking. They weren't the quality of water gardens that they had hoped. But because it was my passion, we learned that, hey, if your water garden is not as clear as you want, there's actually an ultraviolet light that we can sell to you because most gardens were becoming green and hazy. So these ultraviolet lights would basically destroy the algae that was being created. And so I loved the product so much that I could not get enough when it came to research and learning from other people. But what's this have to do with perfection? Why is perfection something I think about often? And it's not about landscaping. It's more about the psychology of the perfectionist. Once again, This is my opinion, and let me know what you think. I met with this lady. She had a beautiful house out in a Newburgh area, and in the front of her house was just a magnificent open water concept. It was circular, 2 to 3 feet deep, nice fountain in it. And for most people, if you saw this aquatic feature, you would die to have it. For the most part, the water was fairly clear. The rocks in the bottom of the pond were very, very attractive. But I could tell that she just wasn't happy with her pond. So, like many times I would meet with a customer, my first question after the introduction was, "So, ma'am, tell me a story." And she told me a story, and a second story, and a third story, and a fourth story. And most of the story was that she just was not happy with the people that were working for her, not just the aquatic side, not just the mowing side, not just the chemical side. As she walked me around her beautiful yard, all she could do was tell me how unhappy she was that, "John, it just doesn't seem like people care as much as they used to. I'm having a hard time keeping my companies here. They work for me for a while and then they decide to leave. And I don't know what it is, John, but I just can't seem to get people to do what I would like for them to do." The more she talked, the more I listened, the more I began to understand the nuances and the different issues that actually were going on here. I'm not a psychologist, but yes, I am a psychology major. And it was interesting as she was telling about the things that she was frustrated with. It reminded me to think back to the classes that I took that dealt with how people psychologically perceive other people and how their perception of other people will many times determine how they feel as a person. We probably walked around almost an hour in the yard and didn't even talk about the water feature. She really was just wanting to vent to me why she was so frustrated with the lack of professionalism that was out there. But she kept using the word, "Why can't people just do things perfectly like they say they're going to?" We then make our way back to the water feature and we look into the water feature. And so tell me, ma'am, what are the things you would like to see done? "I want this water feature to be clear all the time. I want the material, the particulates on the rocks. I don't want that. I don't like that." "John, I've heard good things about your company. What do you think you can do for us?" Realizing now the customer that I had, realizing that I'm looking at an aquatic feature that 95% of the city of Evansville would love to have, I told her that, yes, there's things we can certainly do. We're going to clean this out. We're going to install an ultraviolet light. We're going to change the pump size. We're going to do this and that and that. But we're going to do this and a number of other things, and I think you'll be happy with the pond. However, understand this. You have a piece of nature that is sitting outside. It's a lot different than maybe your aquarium inside the house where you have control of the environment. You don't have control of your environment out here. One of the things we realized after being in the aquatic field for quite some time was that the expectation that people had in aquatics was they saw the picture in the magazine. They saw the crystal clear water. They saw the beautiful koi. They saw the amazing waterfall. That became their expectation. We did not, as a group of aquatic people, really educate our customers very well about what does it really take to create this picture that you see in the magazine. And please understand, with Mother Nature, it's not always going to look that way. However, this was a different situation. The near-perfect water feature was not what this whole story is about. I told her that, sure, we can take care of it. I gave her a price, an elevated price. She said money was no object, and I could tell that. But when I went back to my company and informed them in a few weeks we were going to be taking care of and renovating a water feature, I immediately let them know that, guys, this lady, she is a perfectionist, and we're going to have to really be on our game to make her happy. But I knew myself, I would have a much deeper conversation with her besides just the aquatics. So sure enough, the day came, and I told my crew, when you guys are working here, understand that you have got to be on your game all day long. You're going to be criticized if you are not doing everything exactly right. Because my hour to hour and a half with her had said that I knew exactly the kind of customer we were going to be dealing with. Didn't have many this way, but every once in a while, the customer that said to me, John, I just want it to be perfect, was a customer that immediately told me that we were going to have our moments throughout the day. My crew headed out there, and I unfortunately had another meeting I had to get to, so I was running just a little bit late. But my job usually, and I say this with laughter, my job in situations like this was, in order for my crew to be efficient, in order for my crew to get the job done in the amount of time that I had predicted, sometimes I just had to go out and I had to walk around and talk with the customer so that my crew, who were professionals, could do the job and they weren't necessarily going to be interrupted 15, 20, 30 times. So my job was really quite fun. I got to talk to the customer. I got to walk with the customer. And I literally got to keep the customer from, let's just say it, from bugging the crew. But as soon as I pulled up to the job site, I saw immediately that my crew did not quite understand just how particular this lady might be. Cleaning a pond is a lot like sometimes just cleaning your house. There are certain preparations you have to do to really get the place looking beautiful. But what I saw immediately as I was driving up, there was the hose 200 feet away from the pond that was pumping the water out, and the hose was about 4 feet away from a ditch that was on the side of the road. So this hose, unfortunately, because it didn't make the ditch, the hose was creating a flow of water that was going over the grass. And as the grass was now being laid over, I looked up, and there, standing on the deck, was this lady, and she was looking exactly in the same place I was. As I pull in and begin to walk up to the crew, I'm talking with my manager. She's coming down at the same time, and almost immediately we both say, hey guys, that water, it's flowing over the grass and it's making it flat. And hence we both at the same time corrected the problem. And then at that point, my workers knew exactly what they were dealing with. At that point, I was able to welcome the crew, introduce the crew, and told her pretty much what the steps were going to be taken to get her pond back to the perfection that she wanted. And then my job was to spend some time with her. And once again, she begins walking me around her immaculate yard, pointing out the things that she was not happy with. After a few minutes, feeling fairly comfortable in my position, I said, you know, the problem sometimes with perfection, especially outdoors with nature, it's very difficult. Your outdoor landscaping is not like your living room. Your outdoor landscaping is constantly changing. New things are growing. Wind is bringing elements into your yard. basically, if you're wanting a perfect outdoor landscape, I think you're going to be disappointed quite a bit. She looked at me and she said, so are you telling me that because I want perfection, that's wrong? Good question. No, I will tell you that if perfection is what you are looking for, based on our last couple of conversations together, something tells me that the lack of perfection is not something that you like and something you greatly struggle with. She's probably a little surprised that a landscape guy was so bold and so sure of her issues with perfection. So, John, I'll tell you what, at the end of the day, if you don't mind, I'd love to have this conversation with you. Maybe you can teach me what's wrong with perfection. I love a great conversation, and since I was now able to see that my crew was moving forward in a good, timely manner, I said, yeah, let's do that. As I left the location to go out to other job sites and other sales opportunities, I was intrigued by the fact that I was going to have a very interesting conversation at the end of the day, and it wasn't going to be about the cost of the job. It wasn't going to be about how clear the water was. It wasn't even really going to be all that much about how an ultraviolet light keeps your water clear and clean. It was really going to be something about, well, things that I have noticed for many years about perfectionists. 5 or 6 hours later, I return to the house. The pond is done. The crew is cleaning everything up. The lady comes outside. She's very happy with how it looks. And as she gives me the check and the crew is beginning to leave, she says, so now are you ready to have this conversation? I was ready to go in and have more of a psychological conversation than probably a landscaping conversation. You know, I tell people a lot of times that I'm not special. I'm different. I'm just a guy who likes playing outside in the dirt with a little bit of articulation. So as we walked inside, she takes me through her immaculate house, perfectly clean. We head to the kitchen where she goes to the refrigerator. She pulls out a bottle of wine. And suddenly, here I am sitting at the table with my glass of wine, her glass of wine. So, John, tell me, what is wrong with perfection? Why can't I expect perfection from other people? And you seem to be the kind of person that you don't like when people want to be perfect. She was all ears. Throughout my life, and I still feel this way today, that there are elements in the world that if you're looking for perfection, okay, you want to get that 300 in the bowling alley for the perfect game. I can see that. You want to be perfect at the ability that you can go out and buy the perfect dress, buy the perfect shoes, buy the perfect accessories, look in the mirror for an hour and a half and feel like what you're wearing is perfect. You can go there. But I said, here's what I have found about many people who are searching for perfection. They have a hard time finding it. And so often when they can't find perfection either within themselves or they can't find perfection more often in other people around them, it frustrates every nerve in their body. I said, you know, we've had 2 or 3 good conversations and you have been unhappy with just about everyone who has worked for you, and yet you're unsure why these people who worked for you are no longer working for you. They have come up with some reason that they can no longer work for you. You're dealing with an outdoor element that perfection can be, yeah, if I'm looking at a mimosa tree from a distance and the beautiful colors of that tree looks perfect, right? But let's be honest, a month from now, the blooms are going to be drying up. Perfection is no longer there. My feeling of perfection with many of the people that I have dealt with has been that these individuals are always struggling to be happy because their idea of perfectionism isn't met. And hence, if that's not met, then they're frustrated with them. She sat very patiently. She was a great listener. She poured another glass of wine. I was still fine because I find that when I talk a lot, I don't really have time to eat or drink. But I continued to tell her that the problem with perfection from a psychological standpoint for many of the people I know who are frustrated and unhappy and cannot dwell on the positive that is there, but instead, as a perfectionist, wants to dwell on the negative, I'm just telling you, I think that most individuals like yourself are always going to be stressed, are always going to be upset. And I hate to say it, ma'am, but you're just kind of proving my point. But John, because I want perfection, I'm a bad person. No, not at all. You're not a bad person. You're just an unhappy person. You're unhappy because your need for perfection and lack thereof has kept our conversations constantly telling me what is the negative of everything that we've talked about. You haven't really dwelled on the positive. You're very happy with your pond now. You think it looks great. In fact, you think and said it looks perfect. But I can tell you this, in about 5 days, this pond will not be as perfect as it is right now. The problem with perfection that I have found frustrating is that perfectionists do not dwell on the positive. Perfectionists tend to always think about what is imperfect, and on that they dwell. And because they're thinking about the imperfection, they are looking past the beauty. They're looking past the positive things. Ma'am, I'll be honest. I think 95% of Evansville, Indiana would absolutely love to have your yard. They would love to have this house. They would love, but you don't see what in my mind is an amazing place. Instead, you have found the negative not only in the elements of your place, but the people who try to keep your place looking immaculate, and you're frustrated with that also. She nodded, shook her head. Again, I don't think that because I want perfection, that makes me a bad person. No, it doesn't. It just makes you an unhappy person. And as I said, unhappy person, I saw a quick little smirk. By now, the bottle was empty. The glasses were empty. And I remember saying, hey, love to talk about this again if you ever wish. Appreciate so much you allowing us to be a part of your landscaping and aquatic world. And I shook her hand, and that was it. We never spoke again. We never really had to get together again. Curious what the pond was like a year or two later. But the story remains the same. The problem I see with people who are looking for perfection, psychologically, I have always noticed that they just have a harder time laughing and enjoying themselves. In this podcast, you will hear me often talk about we have two options. We can dwell on the positive. We can see anything, anywhere, anytime. Or we can dwell on the negative. Because one thing I've learned over 64 years is there is both in literally everything, every person, every entity, every book, every movie. there is always the positive. There's always the negative. It is you and your choice of what do you wish to dwell on. I learned a long time ago that, hey, if I ask enough people the right question, and the next question, and the next question, and the next question, I will eventually find a question that they will answer that will make me smile. And once I smile, that means I found something about these people that are positive, and on that, I will dwell. Because you have a choice every day, all day long, to decide what is it you wish to dwell on. It's ironic, and I laugh at times, that as a Miami Dolphin fan since the age of 4, the Miami Dolphins are the only, quote, perfect team that had the undefeated season. And, yeah, they had the Super Bowl ring. And it is kind of ironic that the guy who doesn't dwell on perfection, because nothing's ever perfect all the time, actually has a team that he can say every year when every other team has now gotten defeated that, once again, my perfect Dolphins of 72 are there. So, a little long-winded as usual, but the problem with perfection, that story, that day, that lady, that whole idea of her unhappiness she really felt was because maybe the grass wasn't cut low enough, maybe the hedges were not trimmed just right. No matter what it was, she wanted to dwell, in my mind, on what was wrong with her landscape. Where the way I saw it was not about landscaping. It was about the psychology of the person who, if they wish to dwell on the negative, they will always be there. And can I take it one step further? Yeah. Emily says in my podcast, I can do whatever I want. Our world right now, in my opinion, we have become a people who, unfortunately, in my opinion, want to dwell and look for the negative. As long as we as a country are going to look at the negative, we're going to have a very hard time finding the positive. As long as we have two groups of people who want to constantly look at the negative of each other, we're going to have a very hard time coming together and creating the positive things. But another debate for another day. The debate, the great debate, Thursday. Two men squaring off. What is a debate? A debate, can I just be honest, simply put, it's when a fun conversation realizes that two individuals have a very different view on the topic. And soon they begin to argue. A debate, as I learned back in my days at the University of Southern Indiana, a debate was basically two thoughts. Two very different thoughts that were going to come together, and one was going to prove to the other why they were right and the other was wrong. A great debate, which I honestly love debating people, because if I can debate the other person, I am probably going to learn something. I'm not saying that it may not be stressful. I'm not saying that it may not get loud. I'm not saying anything other than the fact that one of the debate classes I took when I was very young was with a professor that was wise enough to say, okay, today the debate is going to be on mandatory seatbelts. John, how do you feel about mandatory seatbelts? Well, you know, I'm kind of a live and let live. And, you know, I don't like to be restrained. So I'm not really wild about this mandatory seatbelt deal. Okay, John, great. You are going to be the person who is in favor of mandatory seatbelts. But, sir, I just said I don't necessarily agree. I don't think there should be mandatory seatbelts. So, John, like I said, you're going to be the one who is now debating why there should be mandatory seatbelts in the United States of America. Gosh, this was 1981, 1982. When I did my research for the debate, which was the opposite of what I wanted to do, it was interesting. One of the keys I found was, I believe it may have been Australia back then, who had mandatory seatbelts. And when I did my research, they talked about how many people were no longer having super, super serious health and physical injuries because with the seatbelt on, what would normally be an accident where that would send them to the hospital for a week or a month, now it was just a little bit of a rash across their shoulder where the seatbelt held them in. What I liked about this man in this class, in this debate, was that not often do we want to really hear the other side of the story. Not often do we take the time to research why there is a different group, a different thought, a different premise. That's why this debate class taught me something that was very important. Taught me that, yes, there are two sides to every story. The great debate on Thursday night, regardless of who you're for or against or whatever, do yourself a favor. Don't listen as much to the person you believe in. Listen more closely to the person you think you are 100% against. It's very hard for us sometimes to sit there and truly listen to the other side of the story. The easy thing is, what he just said, that's a lie. That's bull. That's not right. Okay, be that way. But if you're really, really caring about trying to improve the world, try taking some of what you hear from the other side, regardless of what side that is. Do your research. Does this make sense? Why are they so strong-willed about this idea? So the great debate. I would be remiss if I did not tell you one of the best debates I'd ever heard in my life. And it goes like this. His name is Dylan Norman. He's 20, maybe 21, I don't know. Dylan is one of the best communicators we have in our venture crew. You know, the Boy Scout troop, I always talk about 399. I learned years ago, Dylan is going to go places. Incredibly intelligent, great communicator. So as one of the communication leaders, I have my young men, they debate on all types of different topics. Imagine you're 19, 20, 21, 22. What you think is important is probably different from what they think is important. But I love getting two individuals up there who maybe have never been in a debate in their life, and they give a debate. Dylan Norman was supposed to debate another venture crew member on whether or not we think it's right for girls, women, females, to be part of our Boy Scout troop, our Scout Venture crew. Remember, the Venture Boys are 16 to 21. They have their eagle, but they're still sticking around to help the younger kids. So Dylan Norman and the other gentlemen are supposed to give a debate Monday night on whether or not our troop or troops should have women, girls, in their scout troop. We found out 3 days earlier that the person that Dylan was supposed to debate was not going to be able to be there. In fact, he was not going to be able to debate Dylan at all. So I had an idea. And I love ideas, especially if they're rare and different or new. I called Dylan. Hey, Dylan, I've got an idea for you. How about this? Keep the topic. But now, Dylan, you are going to debate Dylan Norman. You are going to debate yourself. You are going to have to figure out and decide how will you debate if you are pro females being in the venture crew. You're also going to have to then figure out what is the negative side of women being in the crew. Someday I can't wait to have Dylan on my podcast. I can't wait to be able to interview him. He did an amazing job. Imagine you're looking up in front of a room and there's two podiums and Dylan Norman, who is for women being in scouts, was on one side, did his introduction, talked a few minutes on why it was important, and then goes to the other side and lets you know why it's probably not a good idea. How many of you out there can honestly say that you have been in a great debate, win, lose, or draw, but how many of you can ever say that you actually debated yourself on a topic? Dylan, you were amazing. We'll never forget it. And like I said, someday I'd love for you to sit next to me and we will share with people what it's all about to be in a great debate with yourself. Finally, gosh, how can we end this today with a little bit of humor? If you recall, last week I shared with all of you the son I have, my oldest son, who let the world know that catfish food tastes a whole lot like cat food. If you don't know what I'm talking about, you can go back on my previous podcast and you'll hear something about how my son was able to embarrass me to the nth degree, but still had the confidence to embarrass me even more. Got another story about another son. And this was my youngest son. His name is Dawson. Dawson right now, he's 21. Extremely proud of him. But I'll never forget the day that Dawson made every one of us in the room laugh until we almost started crying. You see, in our family, because of the way I was brought up, there was one rule for all three of my sons. And that rule, from the time they could even comprehend what a rule was that girls are special. Their mom's one of them. I married one. Girls are special. And there's one thing you never do to a girl. You never, ever, ever hit a girl. No matter what's going on, no matter what she says to you, I don't care if she has even hit you, you never, ever hit a girl. As wrestlers, okay, yeah, you might be able to hold them down and try to communicate with them. Yeah, good luck with that. But Dawson, at the age of 4 and 5 years old, he knew, yeah, you never hit a girl. Every once in a while, he'd come up, hey, Dad, yeah, Dawson, what's going on? Hey, yeah, we never hit girls, right? Right, Dawson, we never hit girls. One day, my oldest son, Quinn, brings his girlfriend home. It's a weekend, and for some reason, it's kind of one of those morning afternoons where we're all kind of hanging out in the house. And I was in the kitchen fixing breakfast or lunch or something. And Dawson was in the living room with my son, with his girlfriend. A couple other people were around. And as I'm turned away, I suddenly hear Quinn's girlfriend kind of scream. kind of like out of nowhere, a panic scream. Immediately, I turn around, and there is Quinn. Dawson, what did you do? Why did you do that? So there's Kelsey kind of holding her eye, and she's like, had been hit with something. Immediately, I look at Dawson, who already was starting to feel emotional, who was already beginning to cry, and I notice in his hand, he has one of those little soft Nerf guns. You know, the ones that shoot the little Nerf bullets about 4 inches long. And I look at Dawson and I said, Dawson, what did you do to her? And he immediately, in tears, cries out, Dad, I didn't hit her. I just shot her. And I didn't mean to. Immediately, we all start dying laughing. Dawson's still crying. She is realizing that, no, it didn't hurt. It was just the shock of a projectile coming towards her quickly that hit above her eye. But here was my 5-year-old son crying his eyes out. But his answer, which he felt very good about, was, no, Dad, I did not hit her. Because I think that's where you're going. I didn't hit her, Dad. I just shot her. A little dumbfounded because I just couldn't hold my emotions together. I said, well, Dawson, from here on out, do not shoot girls either. And then for the next 10 minutes, we're just kind of walking through this moment in our lives that I'll never forget. Years later, when he graduates from high school, we had a nice big graduation party for him. And I was able to share that story again about, you know, the son that I am very proud of, who I'm pretty sure as of now has still not ever hit a girl, but he has shot at least one. So I hope you can enjoy that moment. And I think one of the reasons I love kids so much is that only a 4, 5, or 6-year-old would have the nerve to say, no, Dad, I didn't. I didn't hit her. All I did was, yeah. So with that being said, I think we're to a point where we can close this podcast. Again, thank you for listening today. Real quick, who do you love? What do you love? What's your order of love? Remember, I like to share with you, I do love my family, especially when my 5-year-old tells me what he tells me. I do love my God. I absolutely 100% love this country. And even for maybe someone who is a perfectionist that really struggles with why she's not happy, I love her too. But once again, it's not always in that order. What would your order be today? With that being said, I look forward to talking to you guys again. Hope you have a great day and go out and have an empowering day today. See if your day can be empowering and what that feels like. Thank you very much.